I want to thank the worship committee for giving me this opportunity to speak to you. Mary and I have been members of this congregation for 46 years, and that has left me with an awful lot of memories, as you can imagine. I will turn 80 in January, and at some point, aging gets your attention. That aging in itself, at some point, is a terminal illness. I don't have anything immediately wrong with me that's going to kill me next week, but I realize I'm going to go pretty soon. Mid-80s would be plenty for me, as far as I'm concerned. I have wrestled with depression all my life, and I've tried ways of dealing with it, some effective, some less so. But recently I've found that the best antidepressant I know of is gratitude. And I have a lot of gratitude. I have had a wonderful life, very rich, extremely privileged life. And I have a great deal of gratitude for a lot of people and a lot of institutions and a lot of opportunities. I've had a chance to spend time in 19 different countries. I have lived with some of the most interesting people I could imagine. And that's wonderful. And I have a great deal of gratitude for this community. Wouldn't have been coming here for 46 years if I didn't. And today I want to share with you a portion of my gratitude. It's only just a portion, but it's an important portion. And that is my gratitude for the musical community of this congregation. This morning, the men and Anna did a piece that I originally wrote in 2012 as a memorial for my dear friend Don Moore. It was just the melody and the words when I first wrote it. I was out on the morning after his death. I was out walking my dog, and by the time I finished the dog walk, it was in my head, and all I had to do was go home and write it down. And then Elizabeth Harris, who's a fine singer in this community, suggested that I write a harmonized version for women's voices, which I did, and I decided that that was the right voicing for that piece. But then I wrote one for men's voices that you heard this morning that I thought would be lightened up by having Anna sing the descant that I had written for the women's version. On reflecting on my gratitude for the music of this community, I thought about something that Mary and I observed in another UU community. Well, actually, two of them. One of them was in Vero Beach, Florida, and it had to do with sharing of joys and concerns. Baron say that was the one real Unitarian sacrament, but it always gives us trouble because people take too much time with it, all right? Well, the way people in Vero Beach did it is that they had a big dais they could put their adult choir on, and they had a table with a big jar of water, like a fish tank, and people would come and pick up a little stone from one thing, and they would walk across, put their stone in the jar of water, and walk off. That was it. But the adult choir was standing behind the pulpit, and they hummed Spirit of Life throughout, like that was the benediction. The other event was last December in Sacramento, California, where we attended a UU congregation there a number of times. And at the end of the service, which was a week before Christmas, end of the service, the senior minister, a man named Roger Jones, said, they gave the benediction. And he said, "Those of you who wish to go with God, go with God. Those of you who wish to go with the Spirit of Life, go with the Spirit of Life." Well, I thought, well, I'm a Spirit of Life person. But then it occurred to me that this was rather strange. Believing in God is something that a whole lot of people in this country and elsewhere claim to do. And as a matter of fact, there is a very strong stigma in this country attached to people who say they don't. Are you aware of that? Being an atheist is regarded as worse than being just about anything. And I thought, how did the Spirit of Life get elevated on a par with God? And why would the title of a Unitarian hymn be up there? And that's what I want to talk about. Why would that be? One of the things I've been aware of, and I'm not an expert on the history of Unitarianism at all, but one of the things I'm aware of is that Unitarians started out as the liberal wing of the Puritan Church in New England and continued to be regarded as a Protestant denomination for many, many decades after that. In fact, I think it was still the case when we first joined that it sort of was. We were kind of fake Protestants, but people thought that's what we were. And somewhere along the way, we crossed a post-Protestant bridge. And that's what I want to talk about, because I think that one of the vehicles for that movement was UU music. When we first joined, I don't remember what the hymnal was called in the 1970s. It was Blue, I think. It was absolutely awful. I mean, it had mostly it was just regurgitated Protestant hymns from the past and from other denominations. Sometimes with some of the words changed. And one stale joke that you used to hear is that Unitarians are not good hymn singers because they're always looking ahead to see if they agree with the words. Actually, I think that Unitarians sing quite well now. How did that change occur? Spirit of Life was published in 1981. Carolyn McDade is a tree-hugging liberal like me, who has written a lot of stuff. She's written two other hymns in our hymnal. Come Sing a Song with Me is one. But somehow Spirit of Life has become an iconic song for UUs. It is for me. We'll sing it again at the end of the service. What is the Spirit of Life? Well, it's not a deity. I've lived with people who had lots and lots of deities, and I went to the Episcopal Church as a child, and it sure did have deities. And it's not a creed. To me, a creed is something like it goes like, I believe in one God, the God Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. You know that one. Yes. And it's not that. It's not that. So what is it? Well, it's a culture. When we use the word spirit, oftentimes it means something like the prevailing emotional atmosphere of a place or an institution or a group of people. And that's the way I'm using it. Now, the thing about cultural systems is that we assume them oftentimes. Everybody here speaks English, as far as I can tell. Some people speak other languages as well. But we all speak English. Where is the English language? It's not. Is it in the 250,000 words in the OED? No, it's not. That's just an artifact. Is it in the Library of Congress? No, it's just those are just examples of English. It's in us. It's in all of us. And each of us has their own distinctive idiolect of English. We speak it in different ways. We know different words. We have regional accents, and so on. The anthropologist Alfred Kroeber came up with a wonderful term that I liked back in the 1920s. He talked about cultural systems as super organic. Not supernatural, that's like, you know, gods and goddesses. But what he meant by that is that cultural systems exist in some kind of ether above a society that involve all kinds of common consumptions that people make about what they know and believe and value. And that's what cultural systems are like, and languages are like that. I think that the spirit of life is like that too. The spirit of life is something that we create. It is not something that was given to us by some sacred document. If it's going to exist, we have to make it. The British anthropologist Victor and Edith Turner came up with a wonderful term, communitas. It's just a borrowing of a term from Latin. And it meant sort of two things to them. It meant a society, and they weren't using the society in the sense of something that's permanently organized necessarily, but a group of people. That is egalitarian, highly egalitarian, and based on common understandings of the world. And it is also the sentiments, the prevailing emotional atmosphere that goes with such a community. Edith, towards the end of her life, and she was in her 90s, Edith Turner wrote a book called Communitas, The Anthropology of Shared Joy. For me, our job here is to create shared joy. I'm using the word joy in a particular way. I'm not talking about little H happiness or little p pleasure. Those things are okay. But joy to me involves the mindful appreciation of virtues and virtuous creatures. The mindful appreciation of virtue and virtuous creatures. When I wrote the song that we heard from Encore this morning in October of 2012, my dear friend, Don Moore, had passed away, and I knew it. But I wrote that little song as an act of joy. I was sorry, I was sad, but I was joyful too because I knew him as a highly virtuous person. So I encourage you to think about what we do here as being a joy factory, a kindness factory. One of the things that I have found so rewarding in recent months as a member of this community is service on the Caring Committee. And I don't do nearly as much as some members of that committee do. But when I take a meal to somebody, or I drive somebody to a doctor's appointment, or I just sit and talk with them, I have this wonderful glow inside that I'm not feeling superior to anybody at all. I'm just feeling like this is the way life ought to be lived. So I urge you to think about how we're going to create communitas in this community. Thank you.